Welcome to the Punish Podcast, episode 27, Go Yankees. I'm your host, Sam Martinelli, and I'm an editor at the Punish Backlog. I'll be today's host. For today's episode, we'll be digging into a topic I will always find endlessly fascinating. Games media, its history, our experiences with it, and how much has changed across decades. We'll get to the topic in a minute, but before we dive in, why don't we go around, say our names and pronouns, and do why don't we answer a nice little icebreaker question. Since we just passed May the 4th, why don't we go around and say our favorite Star Wars game? So, Donovan, let's start with you.
Easily Battlefront 2, like OG Battlefront 2 for like the PlayStation 2. Played so many hours, honestly, just playing as Darth Maul and running around and just destroying everybody. That's my favorite thing to do.
Hey, my name is Kay, he, him. I'm also a contributor here at the Punished Backlog. My favorite Star Wars game, I'm a big fan of the Star Wars Jedi series, so I'll say Fallen Jedi Survivor, which I think is slightly better than the first one. Combat is better, exploration is worse. I do have a soft spot for The Force Unleashed, though that is like pure like teen, like pre-adolescent power fantasy. I think Galen Merrick has very cool force powers. I mean, you can make stormtroopers kill themselves and just obliterate people into dust, which is always fascinating.
Nice. Hey, everyone. My name is David Silbert, editor here at the Punished Backlog, pronouns he, him. And I have two answers for this. I have the nostalgic My true answer is Star Wars Battlefront 2. That's hard to go wrong with that game. But I think the nostalgic answer is Star Wars Jedi Knight 2. He plays Kyle Katarn. And I remember distinctly, at some point you're supposed to become a Jedi in that game, but the game I found was so hard at the time that I had my blaster, and I don't think I really ever got to the lightsaber sequence. So I never saw how that game played out, but it was fun.
Yeah, these are all great answers. Obviously, the OG Battlefront games are always going to have a very special place in my heart. But I do want to shout out the Rogue Squadron series. Rogue Squadron 1 on the N64 is probably still my favorite, but playing that first level in Rogue Squadron 2, Rogue Leader, because that was the first GameCube game I got. That was a GameCube launch title. Like that made a big difference to me for why I got the GameCube and not the Xbox. So, yeah, that's an awesome one. All right, so we're gonna take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll jump right into our topic. For as long as video games have existed, so too has video games media. While the medium itself traces back to the 1970s, the very first dedicated video game magazine didn't arrive until the early 1980s, with mags like Computer and Video Games in the UK, followed by Electronic Games, not Electronic Games Monthly, that would come later. Once games truly started flourishing following the launch of consoles like the NES and the Sega Master System, the world of games coverage exploded, with tons of magazines dedicated to coverage of the medium, as well as some platform-specific ones, like, most famously, Nintendo Power. Broad adoption of the internet in the late 90s and early 2000s meant that players and fans weren't just getting their news and reviews from paper anymore. Sites like IGN, GameSpot, Game Trailers, RIP, began to dominate conversations, ultimately becoming the biggest parts of games media for some time. Later on, the advent of YouTube and social media completely altered how news was disseminated, as well as how people engaged with critics and reporters, sadly leading to Gamergate 2014 and exposing some of the ugliest parts of gaming culture to the broader internet world. Nowadays, games media appears to be in an especially volatile place. Major sites are shutting down left and right. Layoffs have become way too normal. Meanwhile, the world of influencers, streamers, YouTubers appears to be playing an enormous role in games media nowadays, albeit in an unofficial manner. There's still hope out there. We have worker-run publications like Aftermath and Mothership. Shout out to our own site's Amanda Tien, who's had a couple of great articles on Mothership. Sites like that run on subscriptions and focus more on particular aspects of gaming culture rather than just news and reviews. So just to tie this up, games media has changed immensely over the years, and not just since the 80s, just in our lifetime as well. And it still matters to us here, and we think it's worth talking about it all, both the good and the bad. Donovan, you suggested this topic to us Just let us know why it was important to you, why you thought it was a good topic for conversation.
Yes, happily. And I'm sorry, I forgot to introduce myself. My name's Donovan Harrell. I am a contributor to the Punish Backlog. And I thought of this topic purely from nostalgia, honestly. I was just, you know, when we brought it up in the Discord, I was just reminiscing on the days where I would just, like, every time my parents would take me to the grocery store, I'd go straight to the magazine section or the video game section and look for, like, Game Informer magazine and thumb through it, or look for like a cheat code book, or like the game guides that used to be super thick, and you know, or I'd go to Blockbuster and look for the same thing there. And you know, as I got older and started, you know, using computers more, I learned how to bookmark things. So I had like a ritual where I'd always log in, and you know, I'd always check IGN first, and then GameStop, and then game trailers, and you know, always looking for the news every single day. And I'm sorry, how could I forget Kotaku? Kotaku was always the first place I'd look. But you know, and you know, while I was doing that, I would have G4 playing in the background. You know, I'll always watch, checking for Attack of the Show and X-Play. I'd watch those shows religiously, and especially every summer I look forward to the big E3 specials. You know, I sat through the Halo 3 special too, and you know, I just have so many fond memories of that. And you know, things have, like you talked about, things have changed so much over the years. G4 is gone. Game Informer's been through a lot. Magazines have folded. Again, G4 doesn't exist. IGN gets dunked on all the time, and you know, credibility for games journalists feels like, you know, it's like at an all-time low. You know, there are constant jokes about IGN's rating system, and you know, it seems like we all kind of get lumped together and as the punchline. And you know, it seems like, you know, the YouTube commentators doing the dunking are doing the exact same job of games journalists at the end of the day. And, you know, I also think about how it feels like things have changed a little too fast for me. Now, Twitch is like kind of the primary way people watch gaming. And, you know, I don't really watch Twitch that much. And, you know, Gamergate happened, and, you know, I felt alienated by everything that happened there, because like along with the misogyny came racism, and you know, things haven't really changed much from there. And I've honestly just been yearning for a simpler time, you know, just looking for thumbing through the game magazines and checking those websites again. I miss those days, but it's hard to keep up with everything nowadays. But yeah, that's why I thought of this topic.
Yeah, well said. What I appreciate about what you started with, like, you're talking about the experience, not just of actually reading the magazines, but where you went to get them. And something I used to do a lot when I was a teenager was I would go to a Barnes & Noble that no longer exists, and there was like a cafe at the top floor, and just like, I'd buy one thing, like I'd buy like some juice or like a bagel or something, and just like flip through all of the game magazines, whether it was like Game Informer, EGM, or Game Pro. And I don't know, that to me, that matters just as much to me as what I was reading, is that it was almost this ritual, an activity beyond just what was on the page. And that's the thing, like, it's more than just that. So I guess, David, what would you say were some of your, when you were growing up and getting into games, like, what were your sources, and how did you engage with them?
Yeah, many of the same, you know, sites and shows and, you know, magazines and media that Donovan mentioned. Obviously, like, IGN was, you know, a big presence in my life growing up, and obviously it remains, even if, you know, it feels like, you know, there's a constant push and pull between them and their fans. Game trailers is probably the one that comes to mind with me the most in terms of just like a ritual. Like, I remember the sites that I'd have bookmarked in order would be like IGN, Game Trailers, perhaps, you know, Game Informer, you know, back then, still now. I remember buying GamePro magazine as well. You know, rest in peace. But no, just I think for me, I like what you said, Sam, about the ritual of, you know, where you go, how you consume. But also, I think, you know, media back in the day, you know, we saw that with blogs, you know, websites/blogs like Kotaku. We saw it, you know, with game trailers and after game trailers, you know, shuttering with Easy Allies, but the kind of personality based, you know, media in the space. So like, you know, I almost more so than the outlets, I've come to know like certain names like Kyle Bosman or, you know, Jason Schreier, you know, the list goes on. People that I've read for, I don't know, a decade plus or watched on tape. You know, Jeff Keighley, I remember watching like bonus round panels with him and Michael Pachter long before.
That's my boy, Michael Pachter.
Michael Pachter.
I've interviewed him for work so many times.
Yeah. Long before he did, you know, sifted with Shane Satterfield and, you know, long before Keighley did the Game Awards. And, it was just I echo what Donovan says. It was a simpler time. I still think we get a lot of those things nowadays. We certainly get a lot of personality, whether it's the same quality as what we, you know, used to have. I'll leave that up to everyone else here. But yeah, it was an interesting time for sure growing up.
Yeah, I think it's very, you know, the medium is the message coded, right? It's like the act of going to the store and reading stuff there, like it changes how you perceive or interact with the actual content. But for me personally, I very much only like consumed games media like around like starting in high school, and it's pretty much all on the internet. So I remember being my like big five like authoritative sources then being like IGN, Kotaku, Polygon. Well, I think Polygon started maybe when I was like a junior or something. David and I are the same age, so probably when we were juniors. So maybe, you know, but IGN, Kotaku, Destructoid, Game Informer, that era. And then like I very much follow like the shift in trends of those sites. Like IGN like slowly lost more and more credibility, right, as time sort of went on, I think. In large part because like they were both news and like I relied on IGN a lot more for like walkthrough content. I don't know if this is true for anyone else, but for me, IGN was mostly about walkthroughs. I didn't really care about their voice so much. And so it kind of makes sense to me that their voice became sort of like the most generic one in a lot of people's eyes. And then over time that kind of took on its own negative connotation. And then, you know, like sites like Kotaku sort of carved out their own niche, you know, whether that be like, depending on your point of view, like deliberately contrarian or like whatever you want to call it, right? But for me it was mostly about those five sites and reading them. And then sort of I feel like I went from only caring about reviews to moving into other forms of like written content. I don't know if that's true for you guys as well, but I do think I've moved from like only caring about reviews to mostly not caring about reviews, if that makes sense.
It makes sense to me because like that's when I remember reading all these magazines or going on these sites. What I was primarily looking for at the time was, like you said, just news and reviews, just like what's happening, what do they think. And what I realized when I look back on it is what I actually remember the most. I don't remember what anyone at Game Trailers said about Metroid Prime 3 or Call of Duty 4 or whatever games were coming out back. I don't remember exactly what score they gave BioShock, but I do remember, you know, like David mentioned, like that Jeff Keighley panel show and some of the commentary that they were making there. I do remember, just like every now and then one of these places would have, one of these magazines would have some critical piece or a debate. There was a really weird one back in Nintendo's, like, I won't call it dark era, but like the last days of the GameCube before the Wii was actually announced. I read a Nintendo Power, which for the most part was like Fox News for Nintendo, but like it was basically like propaganda for Nintendo, like they owned it. But there was they had a debate. Okay, you might find this funny. It was like, we need to fill these pages with something because there aren't actually games coming out. So they had like a 4-page debate between two writers at Nintendo Power over whether or not it was ethical to use the C-stick for smashes in Super Smash Brothers Melee. And it was just like, I was kind of reading it being like, who cares about this? But at the same time, I read the whole thing. And like, clearly there was a part of me, I guess in retrospect, I'm like, yeah, I do kind of like the idea of these discussions. Maybe this wasn't, you know, the most serious game criticism or whatever, but like having these discussions that are just outside of those reviews. And so like, now I definitely go for that kind of content in written form or in video form or podcast form more than standard reviews. But there were still kernels of this back then, you know? I mean, for everyone else, like, what kind of things specifically do you remember reading in these magazines? And do you think, are you like me and Kay, where like what you expect from these places has changed as well as they have changed themselves?
I honestly just, I remember the way I consume these media, like definitely news and reviews, but I honestly didn't have a good appreciation for like the more nuanced, you know, C-stick, morality type of articles until I was much older. But honestly, all I was interested in was riding the hype train, whatever was the most hype, cool thing going on. I wanted to know everything about it, or whatever would give me like the dopamine hit, and you know, whatever drama was going on in the gaming community. Like I was looking for messy stuff most of the time, and Kotaku had a lot of mess.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I've been trying to rack my brain. I'm in a weird situation where, you know, as one of our two, you know, review editors here at the site, like my relationship with like Donovan, I was firmly entrenched in the hype cycle. And I think to some extent that has persisted. I don't think that that's necessarily evolved. Like I still appreciate a well-written review or, you know, a timely preview or, you know, watching a press conference. But I will say that I am fascinated by the ways in which, you know, certain magazines or outlets over time have kind of flipped even that on its head a bit. The prototypical or the example that comes to mind right now is like up until a while ago, I don't know if they still do it, but end of year list, right? We love doing our end of year list here at the site. And I know every time Polygon does their end of year list, it's like they always have like the really out there number where it's like they're not ordered, but they are ordered. And you're like, okay, oh, Her Story, their number one game of the year. It's like, that's interesting. And it's so funny. You focus on the placement of the things on the list more so than the actual content sometimes. But I think sometimes that's just part of the fun of, you know, kind of, I don't want to call it like tabloids, right? But it's like, you know, when you have a magazine or you have more of a kind of like personality driven website where, you know, you need to stand out somehow, some way, that's the kind of stuff that bubbles up is like the interesting discourse. It's like, it's not hurting anyone. It's not like these kind of scathing hit pieces or whatever, but it's just like fun, right? Like it reminds me, that C-Stick article sounds incredible. I hope we should link it in the final piece that accompanies this. But yeah, I mean, that's just the creativity on display. I wish we would see more of that, but no, I'm kind of like I'm a creature of habit.
I think the character of like these like primary websites is like a really interesting topic of discussion as far as media goes. It's kind of like similar to like when newspapers, like in the US at least, have like a liberal or conservative bent, right? Like I think around the time when their voices became very clear, like they all took on like I think a lot of people view Kotaku at the time or maybe currently as like deliberately contrarian or kind of like throwing stuff out there for like clicks and controversy, but in sort of like, and it's tough to like talk about this because obviously there's like this contingent of people that like hate Kotaku for like, you know, kind of like shitty reasons. So I am not trying to like lump myself in or lump anyone in with that group specifically, but I do think Kotaku has sort of cultivated this like, you know, reputation for kind of like throwing stuff out there that is like intentionally like it's pseudo incendiary, not in like a serious way, but in like a, you know, because like nothing about saying like this game is a 7 out of 10 is really incendiary in the same way that like, you know, a newspaper pushing some sort of like angle, like a newspaper columnist pushing some sort of angle actually would be, right? Like Bret Stephens in the New York Times, this is not like that sort of thing. Like same thing with what you're talking about with Polygon. It's like, we have this expectation that like Polygon's best games list has like 10 like really niche picks that are like, sort of like, they are putting them there in order to like sort of draw attention to them specifically, right? And I think that evolution of the sites has been like really interesting to track and watch. Like, I don't even know if I would say I'm like a fan of Kotaku or Polygon, but they are still websites I check basically for that reason, because like I find that angle that they have interesting, even if I almost like always disagree. Like whenever someone like likes a Kotaku article in the Discord, I'm usually like, I think this is bad, but I still check the site like every day, you know what I mean? So like it's working at the very least.
Well, that's an interesting thing to bring up about this idea that all these sites, all these sources, all these magazines seem to have a particular identity, and whether or not that resonated with you, it didn't resonate with everybody, but like that really mattered in that kind of, and that's where some of these attachments were drawn to that we've drawn. And I think it's a big thing that's changed now, is it kind of seems like for a site to really survive now, they can't just be covering everything. They kind of have to go in a certain direction. I mentioned before Mothership, which Maddie Myers and Zoe Hanna launched two, three months ago. That's more focused on women in games. And that's, you know, the gamer gators will get mad and they'll get tight about it. But like, that is probably a better way for them to run their site than if they just said, we just want to make a game site. This is just what we want to talk about. And I think that's kind of how I engage with a lot of sites now, is I go to different sites for different things. I go to Kotaku if I want to read something that might challenge me, or at least, you know, say something I might not necessarily agree with, but might do so at least eloquently or interestingly. And same thing with the podcast I listen to. I'll listen to like, you know, Triple Click with Jason Schreier and Maddie Myers and Kirk Hamilton. And honestly, every now and then they'll have an episode where I'm like, okay, they're going to talk about this one game. I don't care about this game. But whenever it's like, hey, we're going to talk about use of AI in games, we're going to talk about what it's like going to Summer Games Fest as a journalist. Like, those are perspectives I'm not getting from everywhere else. And so I like hearing it from them. And so I guess what I'd like to pose the question for the rest of you is that also similar to you in terms of how much has changed? Do you go to different places for different things, or do you kind of wish, when you talk about simpler times, do you kind of wish you kind of went to every gaming magazine and you got some version of the same thing? David, what do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. I almost feel like some degree of that existed in the past. It's just, I think to your point, I agree with you wholeheartedly that the hyper-specialization has become even more pronounced in this like digital first age. Like, something I forgot to say was like, I really appreciate it. I don't even think they do it any longer. I forget when they kind of retired it, but I loved that Game Informer offered like the second opinion. I thought that was such like an interesting way to do reviews, where you'd have like a second score from someone else who also played a game. So like, you know, if I was looking at reviews, I might be interested to see, you know, the magazine for that, or game trailers, true to the name, right? Like that was kind of, I thought that was the leader in video content at the time, where, you know, the bulk of the competitors that I would read, all the, you know, the outlets that Kay listed, were more about print, you know, like words on page, which is like bread and butter for me. But, you know, there was a place I went for that. And so I think to your question, like, I certainly have doubled down. But I think you almost see some of that. It's not like a lot of that has gone away. I think it's more of like a doubling down. It's like the folks who carried on the legacy of game trailers over at Easy Allies, they still do really awesome video content. You know, they still have really awesome personalities who run the show. You know, Game Informer, as Donovan, you said, has had like rocky ups and downs, but the magazine is still intact. Like the quality of the magazine has maybe changed. Like I'm talking about the actual paper, but the fact that I can still get it delivered to me and have that experience shows that, you know, maybe there was something that pulled me to those different sites beyond just, oh, video game media, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I do want to point out one thing about game trailers. A big thing that changed because of game trailers, I think at least. If you guys ever have the time, go back and look at like early YouTube video reviews from places like GameSpot from like the mid-2000s, and they clearly have no idea what they're doing. Like, and that's not their, like, again, they're not just like reading the review. They're just kind of like, all right, let's talk about Oblivion. This game is pretty cool. There's these big portals, so you can go into the portals and fight the monsters in there. And if you're worried about this world being too big, guess what? There's fast travel. And like, that's what every video sounds like. They all just, someone just droning on because they don't realize like this has to be just as airtight as a written review. Mm. And game trailers kind of normalize that, and then YouTubers would come in and make that more of a thing. Yeah, so. But anyway, I just want to get that aside there. Donovan, like, what about you? What do you have your specific set places you go to for specific experiences? Has that been consistent throughout your time, reading games media?
Oh, absolutely. I can't believe I didn't bring this up, but Event Hubs was a huge influence for me when I was getting into Street Fighter IV. I checked them constantly for news about honestly the move sets for the characters and any, you know, scrap of information about rosters and leaks for, you know, Marvel versus Capcom 3. And honestly, Event Hubs was kind of my introduction into sort of getting into the more cultural side of things, because I remember getting into debates in the comments section of it. Yeah, Event Hubs is a really, you know, they go at it in the comment section. But
Event Hubs comment section, legendary for sure.
Legendary. I just remember going back and forth with people about like inclusion of black characters in Marvel versus Capcom and Street Fighter, and just being like, I'm sick of seeing like blonde haired white dudes and women. Like, we have 12 of them. Can we get something else now, please? And, you know, just going back and forth there. But yeah, Event Hubs was a huge specialty site, and still is, you know, not as much as it was before, but definitely around Evo or Combo Breaker, I always go there and check them for the latest news, or, you know, where I can find the streams even. But definitely still go there whenever I do, you know, dust off the many fighting games I have and I need to look over some combos or some frame data, I go straight to them first.
Event Hubs is interesting. I'm a huge Event Hubs, like, I don't know, hater, I guess, because like, obviously, like, I played like melee competitive Smash, so like they always hated us and stuff, and like Ian Walker was like a huge piece of shit to a lot of people in the Smash community and all this stuff. But like, it's kind of funny because like certain sites I associate very strongly with certain personalities. Obviously my bias showing with Event Hubs there, and then like Destructoid I mostly associate with sort of, well, now still called the Gymquisition, you know, Stephanie Sterling was like a really big, like, I pretty much went to Destructoid just for, and I think she shaped the culture of that site in a lot of ways. It was a bit more like irreverent than the other sites, Destructoid, in some ways a bit more personal. And then Kotaku, this isn't really correct because obviously Steven Totilo, I think, or Crescente first and Totilo, there's a string of like editors in chief, but I mostly really strongly associate Kotaku with Gita and Patricia and Cecilia. Gita Jackson, Patricia Hernandez, and Cecilia D'Anastasio, for the most part, for example. And I just have a tendency to associate certain sites really strongly with certain individuals that wrote prominently for the site. While like IGN, I don't have that association really at all, at least in terms of their content. Like Pear, I think of as the face of IGN, but I don't think Pear really like produces content for IGN in the same way. Same thing with Polygon. Like Polygon is sort of more like, to me, a collection of like interesting freelancers that post articles that I'm interested in. So, but yeah, that I just like kind of wanted to talk about, like, it's kind of interesting how, to me, like, so a very select number of like writers, journalists, like really framed my understanding of games media, like growing up at least, even though that's like obviously not technically correct. There's like so many layers that the average like corporation or any project goes through that shapes the voices that you hear, that it's obviously incorrect to like authorize any given website. But yeah, it's just like an interesting thought I had. Also sort of separately, I think an interesting thing about video game media is the sort of prevalence of sites that are basically have two roles as like fan sites and news sites. You know, Nintendo, you brought up Nintendo Power, but even something like there's like, if a gaming site has the company's name in it, I don't trust it. Like point blank, DualShockers is propaganda. Windows Central is propaganda to me. Like all the Nintendo sites, they're all propaganda to me. Like all these sites, like they compose such an interesting amount of the atmosphere, and I think they're all untrustworthy. RPG fan, untrustworthy. You know, same like all the way down to me, at least. But I am also like a notably negative person. So,
well, I want to push back on you on that one though. So wait, you're saying if a site is, I get what you're saying about like an allegiance toward a specific, you know, a specific platform, for instance, or a specific company, but you're saying like any company that say like the RPG fans and RPG sites of the world that focus on like genre specific stuff.
I guess it kind of depends because there's like kind of two types of people, right? The deeper your allegiance is, the less likely you are to criticize it, and then the deeper your allegiance is, the more likely you are to criticize it. So if you fall into the former, then I don't trust you, and if you fall into the latter, you're the most trustworthy person in the world. Obviously, like I say this to someone as like the more I like something, the more critical of it I am, like constantly. That's like my personal preference. So that's like kind of where I land on things. For my part, my exposure to RPG fan has been that they are more of the glazing variety and less of the critical variety. So that's why I say that. But obviously I'm painting with broad strokes here.
That's fine.
I'm being
generous. I will say, as someone who has written there before, and we have a second writer there too. And that was a dream come true to write there, albeit ever, you know, for a very small window of time, because, you know me, we're both big RPG people. And I get what you're saying. I think that, you know, nothing is ever, you know, white or black, right? There are shades in between. And I think inevitably you go to any kind of like fandom, for lack of a better term, kind of outlet. Like, we love RPGs here. And I think you summed it up perfectly. You will get people that are like, they give like kind of softball scores to two games because they love it, and that might like erode a little bit of their like critical edge. But I also think you're going to find people on that same staff. I'm not just speaking about this outlet. I'm talking about any, you know, outlet, you know, esports. People are going to be particularly harsh on, you know, certain games when the mechanics don't line up. You know, that's why I feel like your understanding of Smash Bros and the community and the games is so different than my own, and it's so interesting to see we can interact with the same resource, the same kind of, you know, I was gonna bring up real quick, like the I think immediately of like the Sakurai you know propaganda blog, which is like I feel like at a certain point in time that got more traffic than actual like gaming websites. But I was like, I know you and I were both tuning in.
I translated those, like a good number of those like come from me. Like
talking about, you did like a fan site or like Sakurai's actual
like
website?
Like Sakurai columns, not the dojo. I translate the Melee site too.
The dojo was a peak time. I just wanted to give that a quick shout out, because that was I get it's not an outlet, but their ability to invest so much, it's like Sakurai being extra. It's like, I need blog posts, I need video content, GIFs, I need everything in here. And people are going to eat it up, and I don't care if it's like a crazy investment.
The dojo is rough. Probably the biggest source of crushing disappointment in my entire life.
Oh, yeah. They're in the brawl days, the dojo, every day. Yeah. Crazy times.
Sorry, Sam. Didn't mean to cut you off.
All right. There's a lot of points being made in totally all different directions. So I'm going to try and see if I can mash them all into one thing or funnel them together. So, when you're talking about fan sites like Nintendo Life or DualShockers or whatever, same with whatever, like Smash Bros. Dojo. What I find funny that I don't know if this has actually changed that much over the years, but there does seem to be, we've said simpler times a lot on this podcast about what it was like to like just read these magazines and be really nostalgic for them. But they were, the biggest criticism of them, not just in retrospect, but at the time, was that they weren't critical enough of games companies, unless they would like, I don't know, make some game that was just truly awful. But and when I think back to these magazines, I also remember a lot of the advertisements that were in them, right? That the advertisements that Nintendo and Sony and Capcom and Electronic Arts and all these companies were putting in there. And they were all very male oriented. They were all very white male oriented. They had a lot of sexual innuendo. They had a lot of, there was like, I think it was like for the PS2, there was like a famous print ad that was a bunch of condoms that had like the XO square triangle on them. And it's funny when I think about, and I know I was just going to veer off into a little bit like a more serious topic, but when we talk about Gamergate and these like overly online misogynist racist chuds who determined that any kind of games coverage that wasn't specifically catered to them was somehow not credible or not legitimate, I think the seeds of that were planted in these magazines in the 90s and the 2000s. Not that they invented racism and misogyny or anything like that, but just like, I remember reading a GamePro. I bought it a few years ago. It was like the Video Game History Foundation. You could just like give them $15 and they'll send you a random gaming magazine. And they had a whole section of like, you know, magazines always do this, the letter to the editor, where you write in and then you might get a response that's printed in the paper. And it was a lot of questions like, hey, how do I get my girlfriend to stop, you know, nagging on me when I'm trying to play Call of Duty? How do I get, and the thing is, all of the answers would be very pro man because they were all men writing at these magazines. And so we've talked a lot about some of the things we like from back then that we don't have now, but like, sometimes I say to myself, there's a lot of things that are happening now that I wish we had back then. And a big part is more diverse voices. A big part of that is, more worker-owned publications and more independence. And I guess, I don't know, what's anyone's take on what I'm saying here? That like, maybe it was a simpler time for us because we didn't understand it as well.
Yeah, much. To be clear, the simpler times thing is because my brain was simpler, you know? Like, it wasn't actually a better time.
I know, but that's how a lot of people talk about nostalgia in games. And it's like, you know, the joking example I always use is, I had a lot of fun in my early 20s drinking Four Loko and going to dubstep shows. That doesn't mean I want to do that now. I can't do that now. But like, I thought it would be, I don't want to be like, hey, I'm 35. I can go do this and have just as much fun. I won't. But if I could be 21 again and do that, that might be fun. And so I don't know, like when we think about Gamergate, I just want to make sure that people don't view it as this like isolated thing, because it's always kind of been there and it was just kind of unlocked. Like, is that making sense? David, what do you think?
Yeah, no, totally. And I think, yeah, just to read it back a bit, it's like, simpler times, right? Slash, you know, we just didn't realize how, I'm not going to say the four of us, but I'll loop myself in. It's like, I think it's easy to not recognize the, just how narrow-minded media and gamers alike were during the time. And I think, unfortunately, thankfully, you know, Gamergate was awful. I think one of the silver linings that came out of that was, you know, and continues to be more diverse media and representation in media. You know, now we have, you know, a lot of the, you know, flagship outlets that, you know, I follow and, you know, I know many of us follow, have voices that just would not have had the same opportunities 10, 20 years ago, just due to how oppressive and toxic, you know, games can be. And again, it still is. And I think one of the tough things is like, I feel like gamers, I hate the word gamers, right? Players have not really evolved alongside the journalists and the people and the developers and the people that create and cover these games. So it's tough. It's like, I almost feel like the people who read our site or other sites and the people who play games, and they almost don't deserve that stuff because, you know, it's just, I think, and I don't think it's a matter of just like, oh, gamers are 99% men, because we know that's not true, right? It's just the opportunity or the platforming to, you know, to basically amplify those voices is really hard. And so people, you know, just don't feel like they can share their thoughts. And it's one of the reasons why I love that what we have here at the site is just a site that, you know, I don't really think we have a niche. I think that maybe odd me. I love being a generalist, but one of the things we definitely do have is a diversity of background and thought and race and gender and gender identity that is really, you know, allows us to bring different ideas to the table and look at games in really interesting ways that I know would not have been here 20 years ago.
Yeah, I just thinking back to things I wish we had more of. I didn't start appreciating this more until I actually started studying journalism, but I wish we had more serious journalism, you know, trademark in the gaming industry. I'm glad we have like Jason Schreier now doing investigative reporting, and you know, but I don't recall as much reporting on the industry itself and working conditions for making games and these kinds of serious news pieces that we get nowadays. And also when I started learning more about conflicts of interest, I guess going back to what Kay said, I started sort of questioning some of the outlets I was reading. And, you know, I think one of the big like red flags for me came up when like IGN, I think, purchased the Humble Bundle store. And I still don't quite understand how that works. That's still kind of a conundrum in my head. But anyways,
Game Informer used to be owned by GameStop. Like that kind of stuff's always kind of existed.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. Nowadays I wonder like why that's acceptable in this particular medium.
Yeah, it's a sticky. I mean, that's I would say a much broader issue in media now about consolidation and the existence of multimedia conglomerates. What's funny, like you bring up about investigative reporting and that, like maybe that stuff existed, but it was only in like the New York Times occasionally, or maybe a local paper. But what I do think that's probably one of the biggest changes that I didn't even consider that we actually have specifically reporting on labor at companies and layoffs and crunch. That was where Jason Schreier's, you know, that was his big niche for a long time. It still kind of is. He's still the guy for this kind of reporting. It used to be like the news you would get is, you know, oh, we heard that this company might be working on, you know, a new Tomb Raider. We heard that this game might be delayed. And like, it would just be things, you know what, it's like the NFL insider, like the Adam Schefter, Shams Charania types. Like we didn't have quite that level of insider knowledge, but that was the information that kind of information was what we were getting. And I agree with you, Donovan. Like I don't know how I would have responded to that when I was like 15 or 16 years old, but like, I think that games media, the quality of games media is better overall because of the existence of a Jason Schreier, of Rebecca Valentine, of a lot of these reporters who are really getting into this stuff.
It seemed a little late, but I think when they finally realized how gaming is a multi-billion dollar industry that, you know, probably should have some serious reporting done on it. I think this is when we finally started getting these stories.
And not just that, but like a lot of the companies that are involved in gaming are massive tech conglomerates that, you know, have their tentacles kind of in everything. Sony is becoming, Microsoft is one of the biggest companies. Now NVIDIA and AMD are two of the biggest companies on Earth because of all the AI chips, but now you kind of have to cover those. One of the biggest companies in China is Tencent, and they own Riot Games, and they own a 35% stake in Epic Games. Like that's essential now, and that's a big part. I do kind of like I would like the idea of more reporting on stuff outside of labor and business, but I'm just still glad that we get this at all. But yeah, and before we get too deep into that, David or Kay, are there any other things that in games media now that you kind of wish you had, you know, 15, 20 years ago?
This is completely unrelated to the sort of the labor or like business talk stuff. It's like more lighthearted, but I think the existence of like footage really helps. Games are a medium that I think having footage for it really helps inform what the person is saying or doing and like how valid those thoughts might be, especially compared to something like a book or a movie. Like, I think that sort of thing really, really helps. This is like it converged into like being vaguely sort of like toxic or accusatory, I guess, but like getting to see someone play a game really, really informs to me how seriously I should take their opinion. It does matter a lot to me. So I think that's like, I think one reason why streamers have become sort of a bigger pillar of this is that like you can actually see them play the game and you have a vague understanding of like how good they might be at a given thing. Like when you think back to like the Takashi Mochizuki, you know, the Cuphead stuff, right? Like it's unfortunate that guy got really ragged on, but like, because that footage exists, I do know that I can't take his opinion on things like this seriously. It does matter. So I think that's a thing that is like helpful, you know, like it's a thing that has improved compared to the past, but that's just my two cents on that element. David, I don't know if you have anything to say.
I mean, I'll think of one, but just a reaction to that is it makes a lot of sense because we've talked as editors about how you love to throw in MP4 files with your content. And I think it's a nice thing that each writer here has their own style and voice, in that obviously you weight gameplay and skill quite heavily, you know, when it comes to criticism in games. I think for me, and sorry, Sam, so you're saying the question is something that exists nowadays that we wish we had 10, 20 years back. I would say, Yeah. I feel like we've covered it well. I mean, part of me wants to talk like to maybe there's an element of like the community aspect. I think the one thing I would grapple on, it's both a blessing and a curse, is just like, you know, social media, you know, I think it does more bad than good. But one of the things that I do appreciate about it is that it helps democratize, much in the same way that blogs did back in the day, right? But it helps democratize the ability to become a personality around games. And so, you know, again, I think we've always had some degree of that, where you see someone's byline in a magazine and you know what you're getting. You know, you see someone at, you know, on the game trailers team that's talking about something, and you know to strap in, I love this person, or, oh, I'm going to disagree with this person at every turn. But I think now you can just, you know, to the point you made earlier, Sam, about specialization, I mean, you can find video content, podcasts, print content on any topic you want, no matter how small, nowadays. And, you know, content for the sake of content, I mean, maybe that's not a great thing, but it is something that at the very least is interesting to see in 2026. And I'm not quite sure we had it back in the day.
I just wanted to add that I think games done quick is something I wish we had back in the day. That's probably my favorite thing that Twitch has brought to my attention, and just speed running in general. And the footage of that certainly helps. Like, just the way people break games just blows my mind every time. And it's such a cool, like, subculture of gaming that I think is fascinating.
Yeah, games done quick is super, super interesting. I'll say my last point, I think an interesting thing about modern, this is more about modern culture more so than it is specific to gaming, but I think in the past, like, I consumed, like, if I were to like read, like, if I were to say I want to know what this game is about, I would probably end up reading like three reviews, which is basically three people's thoughts on a game. Nowadays, I like look at OpenCritic, which is an aggregation of 60 people who have a reasonable foundation of trust who have played the game. And then you can go on Reddit, and then you can browse like the top comments on Reddit. And then if a comment on Reddit has like 2,000 upvotes or whatever, that is some semblance of an opinion that is amassed about that person's thoughts on a game and how like universal it is to the player base, right? And then you can, you know, go on Twitch or whatever and see someone play a game. You can go on Twitter and someone's random opinion about a part of a game has 25,000 likes, and you have to parse whether that is like real or zeitgeist or whatever, you know, the case may be. And I think a sort of like interesting part of this is that like we now have like a pulse on what people think about games, even like to a degree that was like unfathomable before, basically, you know. And I think that is like really interesting. I'm personally like a Reddit browser, so like I kind of get that sort of like filtered anonymous group opinion, probably more so than some people on this site, or maybe more so than most people on this site. I really don't know how. Like, I get a lot of like gaming news through aggregators, you know, like Reddit. So that's kind of where my perspective is at. But Sam, yeah, what do you have to say?
Well, just an interesting thing about like even it's not just that we have a good understanding of like what the consensus view of a game is. We have an understanding of what changes about that consensus over time. Like we've talked about this a million times, where like Fallout 4 gets great reviews, makes everyone's top 10 list. But like, if you actually like talk to us on the site and like listen, like ask everyone how they feel about Fallout 4, loving that game then becomes the, you know, unpopular opinion. And like that's, or like, another example I always bring up is something like The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, which again has like a 93 on Metacritic, but like so much of the fandom despises that game. And you wouldn't know that from the critic reviews. You know that from Twitter, you know that from Reddit, you know that from YouTube, you know that from comment sections. One last thing I wanted to point out, I think Patreon is something that's a big game changer now, where people can, you know, be not just subscribers to their favorite channels, but to specific YouTubers where they get extra content or bonus episodes of a podcast or something. And it's not just that people want to pay for these things. It's that they want to feel like they are a part of it. Like everyone wants to feel like they're part of these discussions, these kernels of discourse. And it just wasn't like that before. Or it was, in the earlier days of the internet, it was you had to go to specific forums for these things. Now it's everywhere. And now, you know, a game comes out, even if it's not, you know, the biggest AAA game. All my friends from high school are texting me like, hey, man, have you played Silksong? Have you played Hades 2? Have you played Dispatch? Like these word of mouth, things that would just be word of mouth or just in media are now, those lines have blurred. We're all kind of having these conversations at the same time in the same place. Kay, what do you have to say about that?
I'm just curious, like, do people here like subscribe to a lot of Patreons about like individuals that do gaming journalism or whatever?
Not me personally, no.
Yeah, I guess go ahead, Donovan.
No, I was just gonna say I don't. I got too many subscriptions to.
Everyone. Yeah, I feel you. I was just curious because like, I do follow some people on Patreon, but it's. I will say I don't think it is like a community building aspect to me, but maybe that's just like the people I subscribe to. Like I think I'm subscribed to like Jenny Nicholson or like Dan Olson Foldable Ideas on Patreon. And I don't think they are people that are like cultivating a community per se. You gotta just get like notified when they release a video or whatever, or get some background stuff, right? But I think there are sort of communities that do this. Like I'm trying to think of Greg and whatever,
kind of funny.
Yeah, kind of funny is like a big player where they're like about cultivating that sense of community, I suppose, right? That's a big appeal of it. And I think yeah, it's interesting. I've never particularly gotten into that sort of thing, but I think I just have like inherently like untrustworthy view of people, so it's hard for me to get like that invested emotionally. But
I was just bringing it up. I was bringing up Patreon specifically just to get into the broader conversation about community building, about everyone feeling part of it. But David, you had something to say.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar. I think we're all circling the drain on something similar, where it's, you know, for Kay, it's for you, it's Reddit. You could call it, you know, the aggregation aspect. I mentioned social media. Sam mentioned Patreon. I think they all scratch similar itches, which is like, you know, it could be Substack. It's like people like being notified about, you know, when someone goes live with something new, you know, when someone has something to share, or even if it's something that you aren't following specifically, so you're on Reddit and you just see a roundup, there's an immediate opportunity to opine in the comment section, right? And I say it's a blessing and a curse. Like Do I think that sometimes people should not be opining on a certain subject or game? Yeah, probably, right? Like, I think it exacerbates some of the issues we saw with Gamergate. But also, again, it allows those communities to flourish in areas, and it allows for just like those niches that are those inclusive spaces that are really powerful to take fruit, to bear fruit. I don't know.
One of those is right. But all right, I think that's actually a good place to take a break. And when we get back, we will have a little fun game. And we're back. And we decided, after a very riveting discussion, let's do something a little fun. Let's try to make our own fake gaming magazine. Like, just think it up. It doesn't have to be a Punished Backlog magazine. It can be, if we decide that. But we got to figure out a few things. Let's figure out a title. You know, if this magazine has a particular focus, would it have any unique sections or takes? And if we figure it out, what kinds of games do we want on the covers? So first of all, does anyone have an idea just for a title? Kay, do you have something?
I was just going to say something generic like The Pixel or something. I'm sure that's like already a company that exists, though.
I think it's a good starting point.
There was Pixel, it was like Pixel Jet or something. There was an online magazine that was Pixel something.
What about Perfect Pixel? Or Pixel Perfect, I meant.
That's a good one.
Either one's good. I think Pixel Perfect is good. I like that. All right, we all good on Pixel Perfect?
Pixel Perfect
is what I was going to throw Joystick Drift to talk about bummers only.
Joystick is the predecessor to Kotaku or Polygon.
Joystick, yeah. I was thinking of Joystick, actually. But yeah, Joystick Drift being a games magazine that's just about layoffs, that's just about game cancellations.
That's good.
That just like has big cover stories on someone who died recently.
That could be a column in the magazine.
Just who died?
No.
Who died? And like
death column.
Death.
Damn, Donovan.
Okay.
Kill him. Right. Bombers.
Okay, so we could do the Sad Magazine, or we could do Pixel Perfect. Mm-hmm. That is what is Pixel Perfect? What are we thinking there?
Maybe we should do Joystick Drift. Let's do it.
Let's do
it.
Joystick Drift. Let's do the This Sucks Bummer Magazine. Okay, so in terms of unique sections or takes, permadeath about someone who died recently. How far are we willing to go for this? Because like, John Sterling, the radio guy, like the guy who was the radio guy for the Yankees for decades. He just passed away. I don't know if his voice is in like MVP 2005 baseball, but would there be a thing on him?
I think this column is basically, it's an obituary, but we just forcefully shove in like a video game connection whenever possible. So I think that's what the theme of that column has to be.
No, yeah. Okay, so if John Sterling's voice was used in The Bigs for Wii in 2007, I don't think it was. But if it was, permadeath column of John Sterling. Okay, what else do we have? Do we have reviews of games, but only like the shittiest games?
I think we should be
like the Razzies, you know?
Yeah.
Anything
with a mostly negative review on Steam.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, what about like reviews of games that were canceled based only on like what, like we all do a review of like that Perfect Dark game that just got canceled, and Scalebound, or that one that the Platinum games the dragons.
I'm still so hurt about Scalebound, but yeah.
You guys know how like on NBA Twitter there was like the thing going around with like the playoff series between the Grizzlies and the Warriors, a playoff series that does not exist. They did not make the playoffs. I think this is a good bit. We just review games that like either became vaporware or don't exist as if they were real and just like confuse people. And we like submit to OpenCritic and just annoy them.
Definitely. I see one for the Assassin's Creed, like Civil War canceled game. That'd be fun.
Oh man, that just a quick aside on that. There's only two possible outcomes for that game, right? It's either like a masterpiece or it's like the worst pile of dog shit ever made. And no matter what, we would have to write about that. Absolutely. In next month's issue of Joystick Drift. Mm-hmm.
A Civil War Assassin's Creed game seems tough. Like, I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
You don't think Yves Guillemot can give a nice nuanced take on that?
I just think it would end up being like Miranda was secretly like leading the Confederacy or something. Like they would shove in some like historical fantasy aspect to it. That would be really not great.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, of course. That's why we'd have to cover it.
That'd be great. Just like, you know, John Brown's Rebellion Simulator. That'd be pretty cool.
I mean, honestly, like the Wolfenstein games come pretty close. If they could do like a Wolfenstein 1862, like. All right. What else is in Joystick Drift?
I had an idea.
Dave, what you got?
I'm thinking if we're going to be covering, you know, layoffs and crunch and, you know, bummer stuff, we should be also, I don't know if it's a review column, but opining on, you know, recent M&A and just being like giving our most cynical take and being, you know, like for all the Ryan Cohens of the world, we're just like, you know, this is why this is just horrific. I don't know how we can take that and make that interesting. But it was a starting point. I want to talk about industry stuff.
I think, how about trying to do the fake math to make this deal actually work out? Yeah. Like, I don't know if you guys saw that CNBC interview.
No, I did. I did. Yeah. And
like, maybe we like maximize the hypocrisy here by like, we're secretly owned by, you know, Saudi Arabia. So we have to like positively write about every like S&K acquisition or whatever.
Yeah.
Cristiano Ronaldo in King of Fighters was a great.
Or it's Late just a bit.
The roster.
It's just a bit that we decided. We're just like, we're going to be favorable to like one publisher. One publisher.
Praise
only.
To our oil overlords.
There will be so much positive Metal Slug coverage. You will not believe.
It's got to be Sega. It's going to be like anytime Sega does something, we're like, oh my God, Sega. Wow, what a masterful gambit. 10 out of 10.
I just love like not getting any Virtua Fighter news for like 2 years. It's amazing.
We have another column just to piss people off of like how much we love like the most famously bad games in every series. Like we just like glaze Mass Effect Andromeda and Zelda 2 Adventure of Link and new Super Mario Brothers 2.
I mean, sites like do this, like sites just do that, you know, to like get.
Yeah,
get
but they're not. But those are sites. This is a magazine.
True. But I think if we do it consistently for every single series, people will catch on, and then it'll be funny. So I do agree. Like, you got to be like the best Halo games ranked. It'll be like Halo Wars 2.
Hey, some people love it. Hey,
Halo Spartan Assault. Was that mobile? The mobile
game?
Now
you really get. Yeah. Now we're talking.
What was that God of War game you could play on a flip phone? That's the best God of War game.
Oh wow.
I might have had that game. I think I did.
Oh, I remember that. Wow.
I saw a guy in my chemistry class in high school playing that on his phone. I'm like, man, this is the future. This is the coolest thing. He's like just with one hand, just clicking. Clicking all the number buttons.
I played Modern Warfare on my flip phone, and I don't think I was old enough to have the game, and so I was like, this is my loophole, and I started playing. I'm like, wait, this is dog shit. I think I paid like $10 or $5 or something insane for that.
That okay. Mysterious $10 charge on your phone plan. Like,
oh, we should just be reviewing old flip phone games.
I was gonna say all of the ads should be like the same like sexualized like crazy bad ads from the 90s but like for hymns and MeUndies and all like the podcast advertisement, but just like the dumbest shittiest ads for these companies.
David, it's actually imperative that you finish Final Fantasy 7 before Crisis release for flip phones in 2006 to understand the story of part 3. It's important.
Who?
You gotta do the most predatory gacha games too.
We could have gacha game of the week. And it's just always the same game.
Gotcha.
I also randomly thought of, like, I don't know, Furry Fury, where we just go over, like, the worst anthropomorph by animal games, like Gex or Bubsy. You know, the Bubsy Power Hour.
Dude, I had Gex 3D for the PS1, and I thought that was the best game ever for, like, 2 weeks.
Oh, God.
Amen. Gex for Smash.
Bubsy coming back.
Yeah, Bubsy 4D is coming out this month.
Bubsy's coming back.
Oh, yeah, Bubsy's right. Back.
Wow. This is like, what, the third revival for Bubsy?
Something like that.
Something crazy.
I wrote a footnote on it for some
what
piece.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. They got a good teamwork on this one. But,
oh, yeah.
Here's what I want to know. So when it comes to games that would be on the covers, right? I mean, usually with these magazines, they have a preview cover story. It's like, you know, I remember like, oh, Dark Void is coming out for the PS3 and Xbox 360. Let's have a big cover story on this game that everyone's going to forget about. What do we do that? Like, hey, here's some upcoming games we're looking for. Or do we still go the route of let's do Scalebound on the cover. Let's do the Phantom Dust sequel on the cover, like other canceled games like that. Or let's
just
do like,
of like a poorly framed screenshot. For
like a blurry, it's always a leak.
I got it. It's gonna be a game. It's gonna be like a game that's coming out, like real game, like everyone's excited about 007 First Light, GTA 6. But instead of taking an actual screenshot from the game,
yep,
you take your flip phone,
yep,
and take a blurry picture.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yep. Like just a crappy off screen. It's clearly like when they leaked like Hogwarts Legacy and you're like, where did you record this? Like did you record this outside in the middle of heavy rain? What's going on?
Oh yeah. Heavy rain. We do a blurry picture of David Cage.
It could be thematic.
Oh, we'd be glazing David Cage in every single issue.
Oh God.
Well, the rank of the best video game auteurs and like Shigeru Miyamoto, Hideo
Kojima, like dead last.
Dead last. Yuji Horii, dead last.
I did lose a lot of respect for Miyamoto after the Mario movie comments. He might be under David Cage. I feel like David Cage is a better understanding of art, possibly.
Let's agree to disagree on that. But David, yeah, I think that guy sucks. But yeah
he sucks.
If he's covered in this magazine, he sucks. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in Joystick Drift. Also, let's have one section in this magazine that sounds like it's starting to be about games and then just veers off into something totally different. Like
here's my grocery list.
Like what was that? There's like that TikTok where a guy's like, you know, if I were, you know, I could definitely strike out Timothy Chalamet, and like starts talking about how it doesn't like Timothy Chalamet movies, but then really just talks about how he would pitch to him as a Cincinnati Reds pitcher. Like it would just be like that. It'd be like, it start off like, here's a complaint I have about this game. And it's really just about like, man, gas prices are too high now. So out of my car, like, and just like, you know what it is? It's like a Tim Robinson sketch where he's like, has this happened to you? And it's like, the guys come and like break his toilet. But then of course they start jumping on his couch and saying it's turbo time.
I will say, every month. In regards to the, I would strike out Timothy Chalamet in three pitches tweet, incredible reversal. I no longer think I could strike out Timothy Chalamet in three pitches. I actually think he can hit a baseball. Like,
oh, he definitely can.
Sorry, Donovan, do you have to add something about Timothy Chalamet's baseball chops? Or
no, I just, you know, I admire his dedication to, you know, black culture now, suddenly. Out of nowhere. We could do, like, top Timothy Chalamet fits.
I mean, shout-outs to Modded Controller 360.
Top expressions at the Knicks games.
Oh, yeah.
Top showings.
A horrible one, like gaming pioneers. Like, I just remembered that this was a thing. Like, the first gaming character to appear in a Playboy magazine, the protagonist from Blood Rain.
Like, wow. Okay, that's, you know what?
Isn't Blood Rain the protagonist of Blood Rain?
Is that her name? I no, never.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows.
I don't know, but she was there.
It could be Blood Rain, but it also could be like, you know, the way that whenever my brother asks me about Robert Pattinson in movies, he just says guy Twilight. Like it's just that. And Kristen Stewart's girl Twilight.
I feel like they both deserve more respect now, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, my brother's got kids, man. He doesn't have time for watching shit.
As we learned from your Pragmata uncle. Peace.
Yeah. All right. You know what? We've got I won't say a good magazine, but we've got a good vision for a magazine. We got something here.
It's truly a magazine.
Yeah.
It's one of the magazines.
And it's definitely its own thing. We would be filling a void. Well, depends on you. A dark void, so to speak. Bring it back to the Xbox 360 closet. Did anyone play that game? I remember it got a lot of hype.
Dark Void?
No. Yeah, I never played it. I don't think I know anyone who has.
Nope. Wait, is that the one where you got like vertical cover?
I think so, yeah.
I guess.
Yeah,
it was like Gears of War. What if Gears of War was worse? All right, well, I had a great time with that. Let's go take a quick break and then we'll do a brief outro. And we're back for one last little bit. That was a great discussion. Love chatting with all you guys. Just to close out this pod, as always, let's go around and answer the simple question. while we all say something that we've been playing or watching or reading or listening to. Donovan, this was your podcast idea. You go first.
Yeah, something I am playing right now. I am currently addicted to Ball Pit. I can't put it down. I'm trying to unlock every character all the time. I want all the combinations of all the different balls you can make. And, you know, it is an endless time sink.
That game is a dark void, I tell you what.
Truly a void.
David, what about you?
Yeah, I have been playing, inspired by Kay's excellent Tomb Raider retrospective so far. I dug back into Rise of the Tomb Raider, which I never completed, never scratched off the backlog. So about a third of the way through, I was really trucking through. I started from the beginning. A little too, like, I should have ticked it up one notch on the difficulty, but I've been really enjoying it and looking forward to getting my hopes and dreams crushed when I play Inevitably. Shadow of the Tomb Raider, but that's a story for another day.
Hey, I love Shadow. Talking about Shadow of the Tomb Raider is like one of my favorite things, but what I've been playing or watching, I've been doing a lot of traveling recently, so I've been mostly watching. I reread Invincible and then watched season 4, which has been really good. I would say the best season since the first one. The first season of Invincible is, I think, always going to be the best. It's kind of just like the foundational center of that series as a whole, but very good. And then I've also been watching The Boys, and I also reread The Boys. And I think that's been a pretty interesting experience on the difference between making something with love and making something with hatred. I think there's probably a certain ceiling to how good something can be if the central force behind it is your dislike of something else. And I think we'll see what Kripke does with the rest of The Boys. It's been up and down since like season 3, honestly. So we shall see how things close out.
Very interesting. I have been actually reading, I just started a Keza McDonald's book, Super Nintendo, about the history of Nintendo. I try not to like read a lot of books about video game development or video games, just because like I'd like the idea of there's my games, there's the stuff I read about games, and then when I like pick up an actual physical book, I want it to be about something totally different. But you know, this, it caught my eye. It does glaze Nintendo a little bit, but it doesn't. She's not afraid to, you know, be critical of some of the past you know, workplace conditions there and some of the mistakes they've made, but it's an interesting read. I'm currently in the middle of the chapter on the history of Zelda, my favorite gaming series. So can't wait to get back to that.
Nintendo is kind of interesting because I think for in large part, they have like escaped the ire of crunch conditions. But as someone who knows some people who work at Nintendo, let me tell you, it's probably the worst place you could be.
I think it's just their tight-lipped. What was that, Donovan?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, I feel like they're really tight-lipped about their operations over there. I feel like we don't really know what's going on with Nintendo.
Yeah. I was going to say the same thing. All right. Well, I appreciate all of our panelists' time. Thank you to our listeners as well for tuning in. Next episode, we'll be going over a topic that I always find incredibly interesting. And similar, it's an offshoot of this, the video game hype cycle and E3 and Summer Game Fest, also known as not E3. I'm sure we'll all be fairly normal about that one, no doubt about it. So be sure to stay tuned. Until then, happy gaming.
To learn more about today's episode and the writers featured, as well as to find other podcast episodes, video game reviews, op-eds, game diaries, retrospectives, thoughts about upcoming and new releases, fun lists, and much more, visit www.punishbacklog.com. The Punish Podcast is co-hosted by the three editors of the Punish Backlog, David Silbert, Sam Arnelli, and Amanda Tien. That's me. I make the visual graphics for our show, as well as edit the audio, and a big shout out to David, who handles distribution and back-end support. Our theme music is composed by Jason Hulse. Thanks for listening, and happy gaming!